Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Good morning,
Roto Experts.
To the end zone.
The mark of fantasy excellence.
You have to be careful about who you think is stepping forward on the depth chart.
It's time for a touchdown.
You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts in the morning.
This is your time. Now go out there and take it.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning Weekend Edition. We start your week off 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern every Sunday morning. Don't forget to listen to the Roto Experts podcast 5 days a week with myself, Scott Engel. You can always check me out. And Joe Galino, when else can they hear you on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network?
For now, you got me from 8 a.m. to 11 with you.
Okay, good. I got the exclusive. That's the way I want it.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, some real good draft talk from Davis Medic of RotoExperts.com. I didn't ask to get David, ask Davis if he cares at all, and maybe next time I will, about the Alliance of American Football kicking off last night in the nationally televised game. The San Antonio Commanders beat the San Diego Fleet 15-6. The Orlando Apollos 40, the Atlanta Legends 6. These sound worse than some fantasy football names that I've heard. And I turned on the game for 30 seconds. I don't think I even made it to 60, because as soon as I turned on the game, I got that same feeling that I always got when, you know, when I would turn on the XFL or the Arena Football League post 2013, where just I'm instantly bored because I don't recognize any of the players, and the few that I do probably would be fourth or fifth string on an NFL roster. Young Ho Koo, who scored the first points ever in the AAF, really could. He was just a massive bust with the Chargers. Any league that has Christian Hackenberg as a top 10 quarterback, I mean, what does that really say about the circuit? And you know, I looked in the stands, it looked like they were two thirds empty, and the announcers were pretty good, but there was just nothing to have any enthusiasm about. To me, the AAF is a WOT. It's a waste of time. It's another one of these experimental leagues that's going to disappear real quickly with fourth and fifth stringers, and the fact that they only have eight teams and most of them are not in major markets makes them worse. The silly names, the silly uniforms. The only thing I could say about it is, you know, there was some exciting defensive plays because, you know, they don't have the sort of penalty calling that they do in the NFL. When you see a quarterback get sacked and his helmet flies off, you know, that's a little bit more exciting, but I have zero interest in this league, Joe.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, to me, it's not appointment watching television. You know, I had some spare time. I ended up watching the last 5 minutes of that San Jose game. Kind of have the same feelings as you. I mean, there are some interesting nuances to the game, though, in a way. No onside kicks allowed. You got the Sky Judge, you know, after that NFC Championship debacle. You know, you have that going on. The play clock's only 35 seconds, so trying to, you know, get the game moving a little bit more. You know, I mean, basically, it's just for hardcore football fans who just can't get enough.
Yeah, I think the league was smart in the timing of it and when they started it a week after the Super Bowl, because hardcore football fans who do tune in, and there's a lot of them in the fantasy industry, you know, still want their football fix. baseball hasn't quite started yet, and there's a lot of football fans who aren't interested in baseball, but I think people are going to move on from this very quickly, and I don't see this league surviving. No league that ever has tried professionally outside of the NFL to survive has ever succeeded, Joe.
Right. I mean, what's the closest one? The USFL?
Yeah.
And you know what? And then next year, we're going to get another league. The XFL is coming back, right? So I kind of agree with you. I think maybe last night and this afternoon, you're going to get people tuning in more as a curiosity. But as the combine, the NFL combine approaches, and then we have free agency and then the NFL draft in April, I think that interest in this league will wane. You know, who knows? Maybe one or two players might end up, you know, on an NFL roster sometime next year. But other than that, I don't see it really having a long-term lasting effect.
These leagues are destined to fail because they all have the same thing in common. The on-field product is inferior, far inferior to what you see in the NFL, and you make a very good point. People will tune in out of curiosity, but and you know, we even saw in the fantasy football frenzy that they even had an AAF draft because you know they have nothing else to do football wise. There's no news going on right now. It's a curiosity to them, and they get a little bit intrigued about it. But I can't imagine 2-3 weeks from now that they're going to be talking about the AAF on any program on this network. I just don't believe, out of the curiosity for a few minutes or one game, that anybody's going to be have any sort of staying power with wanting to watch this. You know, I want to hear from you guys about the AAF. 1-844-843-6879, the number to call, 844-843-6879. I don't see how, with especially with eight teams and most of them fifth stringers, how this league has a prayer of surviving anything past a curiosity. Once baseball starts, a lot of people are going to tune out. You're going to have the NBA playoffs soon. You're going to have the NHL playoffs. I don't think it can compete with any of that.
Yeah, and what you said before rings true. I mean, this week after the Super Bowl, I mean, yeah, we have NBA in the midseason, NHL in its midseason. But other than that, you know, people looking for football coverage, and, you know, they're starting to, you know, even Davis had mentioned, he's starting to prepare for the combine and all this other stuff. I mean, they might tune in, but I think they'll quickly tune out.
Yeah, I certainly did it very, very quickly. I mean, to me, talking about free agency is certainly more interesting. NASCAR is back today, unofficially. They will have the Clash at Daytona. You can listen to the Father and Son Fantasy NASCAR Hour with myself and Sean Engel. We're going to give you a season preview and also some picks for FanDuel and DraftKings as well. NASCAR going with a new rules package this year to try to make things more competitive because ratings and attendance certainly are down. I think a lot of that has to do, too, with the fact that they've lost marquee drivers like Jeff Gordon and Dale Earnhardt Jr., but you know, also they're constantly changing the playoff format, although I like the playoff format better than I ever did in the past. Do we have producer Sean Engel available? Is Sean available for a second? Okay, I guess Sean's busy cutting audio or something like that, but I know he's looking forward to the race today, which is going to start shortly before his shift is going to end today. But you know, like I said, too much competition overall in the sports world for this thing to survive, Joe.
Yeah, you know, that's it. In this society where we're looking for immediate gratification, I mean, there's just so many different choices that people have. And, you know, when they take a look, and like you said, it's a inferior product as compared to the NFL. The viewers see that, they'll quickly move away because there's other things that could easily take their time. You mentioned esports. They can play Fortnite. They can listen to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Yeah, well, it's probably going to be the last conversation that we have about the AAF. But we'll have Todd Zolin at 10:20 Eastern to talk some fantasy baseball with us. The Pirates and the Mariners both reporting to spring training tomorrow. So and a lot of other teams this week reporting to spring training. NFBC early drafts are already in full swing. And right now, Jacob DeGrom has an ADP of 12. A lot of talk about there were reports this week that his camp was unhappy because they're waiting for a contract extension here. Hasn't happened yet. I'm sure DeGrom will say all the right things to the press in Port St. Lucie. But are you willing to take DeGrom at 12? Are you like me where I want offense more at the end of the first round more than anything beginning of the second?
I'd like to get a starting pitcher within my first two picks, but trying to get an offensive player who give me five category production is my number one goal early in my draft this year.
Of course it is. I think I actually wait till the third round at least to take my starting pitcher. I want to load up on much offense as I can early. And what's interesting to me is Trevor Story is number 19 overall in the NFBC ADPs. I think we saw the best of Trevor Story and what he can do from an all-around perspective last year. Where are you comfortable taking Story this year?
Well, when you look at what he did last year, can he repeat it? 27 stolen bases, the 37 home runs. I'm looking for a little bit of regression. I think that batting average, 291, falls a bit to, like, you know, maybe a 260 to a 270 average. I think I'd be a little bit more comfortable, believe it or not, taking a Whit Merrifield over a Trevor Story. So I'm thinking, probably a Story, and I won't get him because he'll be gone, but probably maybe a fourth round.
Giancarlo Stanton is 22 overall in the early NFBC ADPs. 23.10 is his ADP right now. Do you think Stanton settles in more in his second year in the Bronx, gets more comfortable, and maybe can be even a little bit of a value at that spot?
He could. I mean, look, he really started out slow, and my recollection of him is just looking pretty bad in the playoffs for the Yankees as well. But look, you pencil this guy in for anywhere from 35 to 45 home runs, he's won't kill you on average. I mean, maybe a 260 batting average. But yeah, I could see him at that ADP being a bit of a. He could outperform that ADP.
You talk about Merrifield. He's 30th overall at 30.71. And then Juan Soto is right behind him, 31st off the board, with an ADP of 31.55. Is this the big breakout year for Soto?
Well, I mean, he looked very good in the 116 games he played last year. 22 home runs, 292 batting average. I like what I saw from him. And in a full season, yeah, I could think it could transfer. I think he could, approach 30 home runs and hit for average. So, yeah, it could be a nice breakout season for him.
A lot of buzz about Walker Buehler at age 39, not age 39, at number 39 overall in the NFBC ADP. Is that a little too high, a little too early for you?
No, I'm pretty high. I'd rather own Walker Buehler this year than Clayton Kershaw. I mean, and there's that little gap of players. I mean, if you are holding out on going for pitching, and maybe you use a strategy that you just mentioned in terms of hitting offense first, I like getting him at that spot.
You have fantasy baseball questions for us, 844-843-6879. That's 844-843-6879. Aldeberto Mondesi is number 43. We've seen some good for him, some bad for him. Are you comfortable with him that early, or you want to wait on him?
I'd want to wait on him. I mean, look, you know, he had a tremendous portion of the season last year. But for a guy that I know he hit some home runs as well, but the 32 stolen bases, a guy that to me, I don't think he gets on base enough to warrant him being a top stolen base guy. I'd rather see him improve his on-base skills. So I'm looking for, I know, especially early in the preseason, a lot of people were on him. I'm a little hesitant.
All right. Spring training, very, very close. A lot of people very excited. We'll be joined by Todd Zola of Masters Ball in just a minute. We talked earlier about the JT Realmuto trade. We'll get his thoughts on it. Mike Fultonevich, 78th pitcher off the board. We saw signs of him. 70th player overall off the board. I've always liked Fultonevich, but I'm starting to get a little bit impatient. We saw some signs of who he could be during the first half, but he's never been able to locate his fastball consistently enough. And, we saw some erratic play from him in the second half. Is this the last chance that you give Fultonevich to put it all together?
I don't know if it's the last chance, but I kind of I like him this year. I think he has some upside. I mean, if you look, he almost struck out 10 batters per 9 innings. Yeah, the walks are a little concerning, a little over 3 per inning. But I think he could deliver you, close to, 100 180 to 200 innings, and could be a bit of a workhorse and get you some strikeouts in those counting categories. So I'm kind of high on him.
Zach Wheeler is the 91st pitcher off the board. We saw the best stuff out of him last year that we ever saw, but is 91 a little high for you? Wheeler's always gotten hurt, and in the past, been very, very up and down.
Yeah, like I mentioned before, I'm kind of conservative when it comes to drafting. So, yeah, I love what I saw that he finally put it together last season after, I think he had Tommy John surgery, right, after 2014.
Yep.
So, in a way, it's nice that he got that out of the way. But in another way, I have a little trepidation.
Big words.
You like that, huh?
Mike Cardano is listening. He's probably looking that up. All right. Lots more to come here, fantasy baseball-wise. Todd Zola of Master Ball is next to talk more fantasy baseball drafting 2019 with us here on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Happy days here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And when you play fantasy baseball, you got to have the Fonzie of fantasy baseball analysts. And we got him riding in on his motorcycle from MastersBall.com. It's Todd Zola. Hey, Todd, how are you this morning?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Do we have Todd yet? Okay, I guess we don't have Todd yet. But Sean will let us know when Todd is here. But do we have Todd? Do we have the Fonz?
Eh?
Yes. What's going on, Todd?
How you guys doing? We're using the headset. We're not using the phone, so it took a second to get it all connected up.
All right, we're all connected now. We got the Fonzie of Fantasy Baseball with us, and Todd Zola. I don't know if he's wearing leather or not, but Todd, this Francisco Lindor news obviously hit people hard, especially if they drafted early. NFBC ADP of 4 right now. How much do you see it getting bumped back because of this news? And Jose Ramirez, maybe he won't get moved to shortstop. What options do the Indians have there now? And will any be fantasy worthy?
Yeah, so as far as Lindor, I think he becomes an early second-round pick. He could be pushed to the wheel if people really want him. I think it's kind of how if he only misses a couple of weeks, especially since it's the beginning of the year, you're able to replace him with someone probably pretty good, and you need to factor that in, that you don't want to drop him down too far because you're going to get someone getting some stats for those 2 or 3 weeks. But you know, it's the other thing. Is he going to be the same player? Is he going to run as much? So I think you need to factor in a little bit less running, at least early. And he mid second round is where I see him. And the interesting thing with Lindor is there was no upside just because he was getting 720 plate appearances a year. So there was kind of a risk taking him, because there was no ways to go but down. And at least we're getting it early so we can make an adjustment. But, man, I don't know. And then as far as replacements, there's really no one in-house. Max Moroff, who knows, Jose Ramirez. Maybe they bring in Adeniyi Hechavarria, but you don't want him for fantasy. I see no, unless they make a deal or do something bizarre. I especially if it's only going to be for 2 weeks, I'm not expecting a major move by the Indians to replace Lindor.
Hey, Todd, thanks for joining us this morning. This is Joe.
Sure.
How has your draft strategy changed this season in fantasy? I mean, with the Rays' success in using the opener last year, do you think that more teams are going to start using that same approach? And should we fantasy baseball players adjust our approach to drafting pitching based on that?
See, well, to answer the first question, what am I doing differently? I'm going to try to draft better players this year. That's kind of my number one goal. I've had an issue with that the past couple of years. But as far as the, I'll talk pitching in a second, but as far as the opener goes, I don't think that changes a thing. Only a few teams are doing what the Rays are doing, and that is bringing in a Yarbrough or Yanni Chirinos to go 4, 5, or 6 innings. A lot of teams are taking advantage of bullpenning where they, you know, 8 guys pitching an inning apiece or something like that. But maybe Milwaukee uses Woodruff or Corbin Burns, but I don't see a ton of teams using the following the same pattern just because they don't have the quality of followers and they don't have the knowledge of understanding how you can switch up platoons and things like that that Tampa seems to do. And I'm drafting Yarbrough and Chirinos as if they're starters. When I'm filling out my staff, I mean, I think, okay, here's a starting pitcher. And it's kind of an advantage, too, because it's not a coincidence that Yarbrough had was 16 wins last year. You can get a win throwing 3 or 4 2/3 or something. You can get a win throwing fewer than 5 innings. So that helps the follower, the primary pitcher, whatever you want to call him. So in general, though, I heard you guys talking pitching earlier, and I think probably using the NFBC ADPs. NFBC just loves their pitching. And, you know, a couple years ago, when we talk, it would be, you know what, you got to draft pitching earlier. But because of the way the NFBC in particular is pushing pitching so hard, I'm now of the mind where I'll take the hitters they're leaving me, and I'll manage, I'll finesse my staff, because the playing field is different than it was. The hitting field is a lot more top heavy. So if you're taking pitching, you're giving up some really strong bats. And in the olden days, you could make up those strong bats. You can't make up the bats like you used to be able to, just the way the player pool is set out now.
Todd, you there, or is this?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, sticking with, I guess we'll talk starting pitching. Let's see. Max Scherzer, Corey Kluber, Justin Verlander, all top aces of their staff, all in their 30s, logged a lot of innings in their careers. Any of these three guys that you're worried about taking a step backward this season? Any one of them? I know that you're saying that you're going to hit offense hard, but of these three guys, who do you think takes the step backward first?
I think potentially it's Kluber. I'm not as down on him as some other people are, pointing out the drop in velocity and a few other things. I'm not going to say that, but if I have to rate the three, I'm most concerned about Kluber. I'm not concerned, Scherzer's earned the right to, I don't want to be, he's getting old. I'm going to be worried. He's earned the right to be the number one guy until he's not, until he shows us he's not. And I think Verlander is in that same boat too. But yeah, all right, Kluber, you got it. Drop in velocities. I mean, there's something there, but I think he's gonna. I think it's a little bit being overblown. He's not gonna fall off the cliff.
We're talking to Todd Zola of Masters Ball. Todd, we were talking about pitching earlier in the show, and the Red Sox have watched a lot of possible closer candidates get signed by other teams. Brad Boxberger was the latest. I mentioned that Bud Norris is still out there. Right now, it looks like Matt Barnes would be the guy if we don't open the season today, but maybe they're waiting for the price to drop on Craig Kimbrel, and he ends up coming back. What do you foresee in Boston here at the closer spot?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of nailed it there. I think the Red Sox have got a budget, and if they can get Kimbrel to come back on a one-year deal and keep it within, they get the luxury tax penalties, and that escalates. So they do need to have it come in at under a certain number. I think they're still open to that possibility, even though Dave Dombrowski and so Dan, they're talking otherwise. But yeah, I don't know if you want to defend the championship counting on Barnes and Ryan Brazier to do what they did last year. And Nathan Eovaldi's in the rotation. He's not there to come in and rescue in the bullpen like he did in the playoffs. So it's interesting. On the other hand, though, it's weird because everybody's so concerned about the bullpen just because, in general, bullpens are so important now. But they're more important. If the starting staff does what the starting staff's supposed to do, I'm not nearly as worried. Granted, there's some risk there with Price and Sale, and I mentioned Eovaldi. There's a risk up and down the rotation. But if they come through, I think they can get away with it. But, yeah, I mean, you'd sure like to have another guy back at that back end just so you don't have to count on Sale and the whatnot going six and a third every single time.
Todd, let me ask you an honest question here because you've been doing this for a long time, and you've been in the industry, one of the top guys in the industry. You're published in various places, including ESPN. What is the state of fantasy baseball to you right now? We were talking with a caller before, and doesn't seem like as many people, like especially the younger set, are playing the fantasy baseball enough. Who are the next guys to take the torch for Tout Wars, etc.? And do you believe daily fantasy baseball is really taking over, is more popular? What's the state of fantasy baseball right now as an industry? Do you feel that there's a concern about it, that not enough younger people are playing it, that other fantasy sports are becoming more popular? What's your take?
No, I think it's fine. As you mentioned, Tout Wars, I'm the Tout Wars board. We just instituted a brand new league because there's so many excellent quality, younger, enthusiastic analysts that we now have a draft and hold league. We're now sponsoring six leagues. So I think the fact that there was just so many analysts out there worthy of a tout spot, I think it says something. I think maybe they're not playing the 12-team AL and NL only, and maybe they're not the group that wants to listen to shows on Sunday morning, to get the in-depth, to get the third closer in line information. They're playing points leagues. They're playing head-to-head leagues. The sport is still popular. So now it's up to us to bring them up the ladder. Go from your 10-team head-to-head points. Now you play a roto league. Now you play 15-team mix. Maybe then introduce an AL and NL. So I think that's the onus of the crowd now. And part of the problem, a lot of these good writers, I don't say problem, but, there's, with all the advanced metrics, you can't scare people away with the advanced metrics. You have to make the advanced metrics deployable, understandable, not scared away. And I think that's, if anything, That's what the analyst, they don't want to, you can't show off and show how smart you are because you understand some of these StatCast thing. You have to show off and how smart you are being able to employ that in fantasy baseball.
All right. You mentioned youth and fantasy baseball. One of my favorite parts of playing fantasy baseball is trying to, you know, find the next big thing, right? And we have some big names, some big prospects that are looking to make a big splash this season, right? We got Eloy Jimenez, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Victor Robles. Who do you think has the opportunity to have the biggest impact in fantasy this season?
Well, all right, Vlad's easy. So, we won't waste time there. A couple of NL guys that I think deserve a little bit of love would be Nick Senzel. We'll see what the Reds end up doing with Senzel as far as finding a position for him. Maybe they trade Scooter and they put him at second base. If he could do anything in center field, there's a spot there. And Keston Hiura, who the Brewers have definitely got some openings at second base. I don't think we'll see him opening day. I don't even think we'll see him 3 weeks into April like the old Chris Bryant treatment. But this is a kid. I mean, I saw him in the AFL, so I'm an expert, right? I saw him for five games. But the point being, scouts all agreed, this guy wakes up and hits line drives. He takes a shower and hits line drives, right? He gets in his car and hits line drives. The approach is great. I think that it's not going to be an empty batting average. He's not going to hit 30 homers and steal 30 bases either, Jose Ramirez type, but the kid can hit. So I would keep an eye on Keston Hiura and definitely Nick Senzel, who could come up in a few weeks, especially the Reds seem to be all in, sort of. And, in that division, you can't afford to give away a game or two. The Braves got away with Acuna last year because they ended up running away with it. It's probably going to be close, at least for a wild card, that I don't know that you want. If you want it, Senzel up, get him up. Don't lose. Don't cost yourself a game or two that could cost yourself a playoff spot.
Talking to Todd Zola of MastersBowl.com. Todd, Malik Smith, ADP of 98 in the NFBC right now. Guy who played well down the stretch last year. Would you be willing to go more early on Smith, especially when speed is always at a premium?
Yeah, well, his ADP reflects the fact that we talk in NFBC, people have to keep in mind it's a very specific league and it may not transcend to your own league. But the point being, what's happening with Smith is, all right, we talked about drafting pitching early, so now they're drafting some hitters. Now there's, oh, geez, I have no speed, and Smith is the guy that's there. So he keeps, as the expression goes, helium. He's got some helium. He's going to keep rising. He's the one people are going to look at to make up for the speed. And absolutely, I would, if you want the speed, he's there. You're losing some power, obviously, but if you need to make up some speed, he's there. Seattle has got, I think they'll run. At this point, they'll use Smith at the top of the order, but as they showed last year with D. Gordon, if he's not getting on, he's not running, they won't hesitate to put him down in the bottom. But, they can flip-flop him and Gordon. They've got, they've got like a few speed guys there that are kind of, either hit first or second or hit eighth and ninth. He's hitting first or second, he could lead the league in steals. He's hitting eighth or ninth, and he's still going to be good, but he's not going to lead the league in steals. So you want to hope that he gets off to a good start and get you those 45 or 50 steals, because he may only steal 35 if he's hitting down at the bottom.
A lot of fantasy players concerned about position scarcity. A lot of talk about first base being an issue this year. Do you have a specific position that you're concerned about where you want to hit first, or is it basically your best player available selected for you?
Yeah, I mean, scarcity has different meanings. I don't think first base is scarce. There are players there. The quality of the position and of third base isn't as what it's been in previous seasons. And I'll contend that shortstop is the strongest infield position this season, and second is close behind. I think they're stronger than first and third. Your utility may come from the middle infield. So I don't know that it's so much scarce as it is just weaker quality. So when you're picking your corners, like, ooh, that my corner's not as good as it was. So if you want, if you don't want to get caught, if you want to make sure you get the power, yeah, all right, focus on your corner infielder a little earlier than normal because there'll be a middle infielder later. But scarcity, you know, again, it's one of those, there's no textbook definition, but absolutely, first base is weaker, at least on paper, entering the season. You know, maybe Justin Bour or C.J. Cron or someone like that emerges and it becomes a stronger position than we think. But yeah, going in, it's surprisingly weak.
Dallas Keuchel, where do you think he's going to sign? If you were to make a bold prediction, what do you think his value is going to be?
I have to believe that he's going to sign with a contender. I don't know who. I honestly don't know who at this point. But unless I think he kind of is what he is. The park matters, but I think that he's a guy that you're going to pick up and you're going to use him in not every single time. You're going to mix and match. You're going to use him more often than not, but doesn't have the strikeouts that some of the aces do. But I think he's going to land on a good team, go deep enough into games that he's going to be able to get you some wins. So if maybe a fourth starting pitcher on a standard mixed staff, you get three kind of solid strikeout foundational guys in front, and then he's a guy that'll help your ratio, or it won't hurt your ratios, and get you some wins.
All right, Todd, real quick, just before we go, where do people follow you on Twitter, and what can they get over at Masters Ball with the Platinum Package?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Todd Zola, just my short 8 letters, nothing in between. And Masters Ball is my Platinum subscription. It's a great draft kit, NFBC champions subscribe, projections, a lot of Excel spreadsheets, drafting tiers, and you get me doing some funny profile and some serious profiles.
Thanks a lot, Todd.
From the NFL to the NBA, DailyRoto.com is the place to win millions in daily fantasy. You can get the best DFS NFL coverage all season long for a price of $129.99 or dominate the entire daily fantasy sports realm with the Elite Package at $59.99 per month. If you use the promo code FNTSY, you get 10% off your DailyRoto package. Go to DailyRoto.com, pick your NFL or Elite Package, enter promo code FNTSY, and you'll be on your way to becoming the next Daily Roto millionaire.
It's the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Weekend edition, 8 to 11 a.m. Eastern, every Sunday morning. Scott Engel and Joe Galina. And about our Alliance of American Football talk, our friend Steve G chimes in on Twitter. Hey, guys, love listening, as you know. Thank you, as always. I think you guys aren't thinking outside of the box in terms of the other football leagues. One league will begin throwing ridiculous money at college kids who can come out of the NFL for NFL after junior year. You can get sophomores for 2 to 3 year deals. I think that's thinking too far outside the box. I think the fact that these leagues exist are outside the box to begin with, and there's been no league that's been able to survive other than the NFL. Again, like we said, the quality of players is just, it's too low. And when you're talking about other leagues throwing large amounts of money at kids, well, that's the old USFL model, and I don't think that's going to happen or work, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, they could throw some money at these kids early on, but just the
where's it going to come from? They're not going to get the revenue from the fans.
Yeah, I'm just concerned about the long-term aspect, the long-term aspect of these kids making money. So, they could throw a little money at them at the beginning, but the NFL just right now just too powerful.
Yeah, but it's not like they're going to compete with them. Isn't this looked at as a developmental league for the NFL anyway?
Yeah, it's almost like the minor league, right, for the NFL, the feeder league. So, like I said, I mean, you could get maybe, one, two, three players, who show that they have something to offer and might get a spot or an invitation to a training camp this summer. It could happen. But, it's more, like you said, more like the minor leagues for the NFL.
The AFL didn't survive. The USFL didn't survive. I don't think anything else is going to survive. You know, whenever I bring these kind of things up, you always get a few handful of fans who are optimistic and, you know, just want to, you know, jump on the bandwagon with something new, and maybe it's in their city and it gives them something unique to do. But I just don't think there's going to be any staying power, especially when you talk about that there's only eight teams. Well, if you win the championship, you're the best of eight teams, Joe. Big whoop.
Right, and yeah, I guess you're right. You know, the level of competition in terms of just the overall number of teams. Yeah, I mean, it's just like an intramural kind of thing, right? You know, just eight teams. No teams in L.A., no team in New York. So that's going to hurt a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think it certainly does. San Antonio versus San Diego. Yawn. But I'm going to be interested to see what the TV's ratings are, especially after week one. But in the Real Football League, a lot of buzz about Antonio Brown this past week, about him possibly being traded. Jamal Adams actually going out and courting Le'Veon Bell. And, you know, that got some reactions in the New York media. Some people were saying it's a no-win situation with Adams trying to court Antonio Brown Le'Veon Bell, because if he comes to New York, it's his doing. If he didn't, then it's the front office's fault. And, you know, there was some talk about Antonio Brown to the Jets, and former Jet and Steeler Willie Colon actually came out and said, there is no way that you want Antonio Brown on the Jets. If you want to build a team around a young quarterback, you don't want to bring in a personality like that.
Yeah, and that's an issue, you know. I mean, in terms of Brown's reputation now. I mean, you know, for a while, Steelers were basically enabling Brown, letting him come to practice late and whatnot. And, you know, there were some, articles that defended him, but the majority of them have brought out the negative aspect of having Brown in your locker room. And, you know, there was a story where the Steelers might be forced to, you know, they're not going to get what they originally expected for him. I mean, some had suggested maybe now he might be worth, you know, a fourth round pick in a trade, because teams know that the Steelers are going to be a little bit more desperate. I mean, remember, Raiders got back a first round pick for Amari Cooper. Golden Tate was traded for a third round pick. There was the domestic violence issue that the NFL is conducting an investigation on. So there's a lot of moving parts to the story where the Steelers might not get what they expected in return for a trade for Antonio Brown.
The thing is that the Jets, in some quarters, that the Jets have the number three overall pick, and they could trade that to the Steelers, maybe to get Antonio Brown, maybe even throw in Robbie Anderson, who's a restricted free agent. The Jets are missing a true number one wide receiver, and Antonio Brown is the number one wide receiver in all of the NFL, no matter what he does in the locker room or off the field. You know, this guy, we've heard reports that he just walks in with he just walks in the locker room with his mink coat when everybody else is already dressed, and then he steps on the field and gets 150 yards. He's that talented. A lot of teammates do respect his work ethic, but he can also be a divisive locker room presence. Would be a great pass catcher, obviously, for Sam Darnold, who the Jets are trying to build around. But, from an intangible perspective, you know, how disruptive would it be? Are the Jets better off just taking a wide receiver in the draft, or maybe going after there's really no number one wide receivers available in free agency. But, you know, there's also been some talk of trading Robbie Anderson. But I can the other rumor I've seen out there is A.J. Green. And I think that would make a lot more sense, because when you look at who A.J. Green has played with, he's played with Andy Dalton. And Andy Dalton was a scattergun for like a good chunk of his career, which made A.J. Green a better receiver, I think, because he was used to catching balls that were just thrown everywhere. Like, they weren't really catchable balls, and he learned how to pluck them out of the air. The only thing with A.J. Green is, can he stay healthy?
Right.
But A.J. Green, if the Jets are going to make a trade for a receiver, maybe A.J. Green is a better pickup than Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and they wouldn't have to. You would think they wouldn't have to trade Robbie Anderson. Now, Robbie Anderson, you know, if you look at what he did in the last few weeks of the season, really impressive. I mean, he's been no choir boy himself, but, you know, he definitely has a lot of talent. Do you want an Antonio Brown with some of the histrionics that he's even showed on nationally televised games, you know, throwing the Gatorade dispenser all over the place and maybe not getting along, you know, with Roethlisberger, but that's a two-way street as well. But you're looking, you know, with the Jets, you have a young quarterback who's developing. Maybe an A.J. Green might be a better fit as opposed to, you know, the high-pressure situation of having to deal with the what could be a volatile, you know, nature of Antonio Brown's personality.
Yeah, Antonio Brown obviously making overtures to end up in San Francisco, where him and Jimmy Garoppolo could be a very, very interesting combination. But we're going to have to wait and see. You know, there's some talk that they could trade him after deciding not to release him, but it doesn't look like he's going to be back in Pittsburgh, despite, you know, some recent more positive talk by the front office. We'll have to see where we're at. We'll have to see where he's at. Could he possibly go to Oakland? Oakland's got some salary cap room. You know, that's another possible landing spot for him. But I think we're all playing with conjecture here. If you mention anybody outside San Francisco, because you know, that's the one team that he's actually made open overtures to. Other than that, you know, there's a lot of teams that could use a number one wide receiver like Antonio Brown. There's going to be no shortage of takers. As for the Bengals, you know, they named their new head coach this past week. Zach Taylor doesn't have a highly decorated background, but you look at what he's done the last 2 years. He was the assistant wide receivers coach for the Rams when Cooper Kupp had a great rookie season in 2017, and Robert Woods morphed from being mediocre to being number one wide receiver sort of type. And then this past year, the quarterback's coach for Jared Goff. And look, you can talk about how badly Goff played the Super Bowl down the stretch, but he played well for a good 11 weeks. There were a lot of credit went to Zach Taylor for helping Goff improve. In the past, he was also credited with having Ryan Tannehill enjoy his best two seasons in the NFL. So neither of the quarterbacks that he's worked with have been outstanding. They both have their question marks, but he's being brought in as one of these bright young offensive minds that everybody talks about. And at 35 years old, he's going to be the second youngest coach in the NFL. And he's got pieces in place with the Bengals. If they keep A.J. Green, can he boost the outlook of Andy Dalton? They got a running game in there with Joe Mixon, who can catch passes. You have three good wide receivers there in Green. You got Boyd, and then can you get more out of Ross? So really, it's about a culture change than anything else. The pieces have always been there for this team to succeed, but they were never able to win a playoff game under Marvin Lewis, and there's been a lot of positive talk, you know, around the team facility already about this culture change. And sometimes football's a game just not of numbers and of depth charts and matchups. It's a game of emotions, a game of the tangibles. Emotions drive the game. And I think from a tangible perspective, a lot of people looking at this as a positive for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, and in any sport, you know, sometimes you just need to shake things up, you know, coaches, managers, what have you, in terms of, you know, sometimes, you know, you get the same kind of rah-rah speech and you need to, you brought it up, explained it perfectly in terms of like a culture change in terms of, you know, just, you know, changing things, and changes could sometimes be good. You know, I love what Tyler Boyd did last year. Looking forward to what he could do this coming year. And you know, Dalton, I mean, yeah, he's a serviceable quarterback, I guess. I mean, he's had his good years, he's had his bad years. I mean, when you compare, like, you know, Goff to a Dalton, can you compare the two, Scott? I mean, one's very young. I mean, I think that Goff needs an offensive scheme that's conducive to his, you know, strengths, and maybe that's what Dalton needs as well.
I wasn't comparing the two. I mean, look, any quarterback is really only as good as what they surround him with. And I think you saw a big difference with Goff when Cooper Kupp went down and then Todd Gurley really wasn't himself to help him out of the backfield. By the time the Super Bowl hit, he had lost two of his biggest offensive pieces. His completion percentage went down about 10 points without Cooper Kupp. He only had four big games, two really good games in the second half of the season overall. And I think if he has got a healthy Kupp and a healthy Gurley, Jared Goff should be fine next year. Back in fantasy quarterback one. Check out on rotoexperts.com right now my offseason outlook from all perspectives of fantasy for the Rams. With Andy Dalton, you know, we've always seen him very, very erratic, good enough to lose with. I think Goff is probably, if I was starting a team, I'd want to, if I surrounded both of those guys with the same amount of talent, I would expect Goff to operate in more efficiency than Andy Dalton. As far as fantasy production too is, if Goff got to everybody healthy last year, next year I think he's a back end quarterback one. Miami also introducing Brian Flores is their new coach. A lot of talk that they're going to move on from Ryan Tannehill. We talked with Davis Maddock about what the Dolphins might do there. You know, maybe they'll wait to see what quarterback of those top four falls to them at number 13. But a major rebuilding product here in Miami. He's got Jim Caldwell as an assistant to maybe help him through. The cupboard's really bare in Miami. They don't have a ton of salary cap space to work with either. What's most interesting to me is their running back situation. I always felt like, and a lot of people felt like Adam Gase just didn't do right by Kenyon Drake. Then you also have Kalen Ballage there. Will it be a timeshare? I think we'll have to wait and see. But I think with Kenyon Drake, you know, that kid's explosive. He's versatile. I'd like to see him get more work.
Absolutely. And, you know, he's one of my early guys that I'm looking at for next season, Kenyon Drake is. When you looked at what Gase had said about Drake, I mean, he seemed that he kind of liked the more consistent production that he was getting from Frank Gore. I think also probably, the blocking ability of Drake was called into question. But like you said, I mean, Drake's an explosive guy. Not only could, you know, run the ball, but actually catch the ball 53 catches out of the backfield last season. So he's a guy that's on my radar for next year. And I think that he could benefit from this coaching change.
I certainly can. Like, for you to say, like, you know, what Gase was doing, like, he wanted the more consistent production of Frank Gore. For me, it was the consistently adequate and best production of Frank Gore. So, Adam Gase, it still befuddles me that the Jets hired him so quick, because he was brought in Miami to really, you know, get out of Ryan Tannehill more and to pump that offense up more. And I think he ran it into the ground more than anything. You know, Tannehill, you know, maybe he ends up in Washington. You know, I always used to call Ryan Tannehill Alex Smith Southeast. So, you know, maybe that's a spot where Tannehill could end up.
Yeah, you know, like we talked earlier, the Redskins may need a placeholder this year, and that might not be a bad spot for him.
Yeah, it might not, but Miami, Devontae Parker's not a free agent. You know, do they hang on to him, or do they give him one more chance there? You know, they have Amendola, they have Kenny Stills. Will Mike Gesicki be able to take a step forward in that second year? You know, there's not a lot of. I think Brian Flores is ready for a long rebuild with the Dolphins. You know, as Davis pointed out. It's going to be a good 2-3 years, I think, before they're competitive. He went from the penthouse to the outhouse, going from New England to Miami. Lots more to talk about this week. Don't forget to listen to the Roto Experts Daily Podcast every day on demand here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're going to turn up our baseball talk because starting tomorrow, the Pirates and the Mariners, their pitchers and catchers, will report to spring training. Thanks a lot, Joe Galita, for spending 3 hours with me again today.
Enjoyed it. Hope to do it again next week. Looking forward to it.
I think we just might. Enjoy the week, and I'll see you on the podcast tomorrow.